Hi, everybody. This is Coach P from the Humble Coach Podcast. You're very welcome back to the show. So, folks, hopefully everybody is staying safe. This is a challenging time for a lot of us, and we're going to try and keep you guys all sane and interested and educated as much as possible. So in today's episode, I had a chance to chat to a fantastic coach called Hat Hewitt. Hat is the co-owner of CrossFit Watford, and she has a really fantastic and unique experience level when it comes to CrossFit training. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation we had today, and I'll chat to you soon.
All right, folks, hope you're all well. This is Coach Park in the Humble Coach Podcast. We're back in episode number 55 at the moment, which is great. And I'm joined today by a lovely coach. Her name is Hat Hewitt, and Hat is a sports therapist. She is the head coach at CrossFit Watford. She's lots of other things, but thank you very much for joining me, Hat. And we'll kind of get an awareness of your background soon. That's all right.
Thank you. Yeah, great.
So could you talk a little bit about your background, I suppose? So you're obviously with the current situation, we're in a strange kind of a limbo with COVID-19 and the whole lot going on. But we, both myself and yourself, as head coaches, we have an interesting kind of a viewpoint, I suppose, on what our members have been doing up until now and what they require going forwards. But also, in general, our coaching lives have been adjusted a little bit in the last little while. So before we get into all of that, could you talk a little bit about how you got into CrossFit, what your kind of general background is, and what you're about?
Yeah, so I used to play hockey at school, and I used to be a high-level swimmer. And then when I went to university in Exeter, I took up rugby. In my third year at uni, I was scouted by Irish Exiles to trial for the Irish ladies rugby team. My grandparents are Irish. My mum was born in Ireland. So there's the family heritage kind of side of it, which allowed me to do such a thing. And then when I left uni, I joined Saracens, a women's rugby team, where I played for 5 seasons. Through that time, I was doing some 15s squad training with the Irish team and also some 7s squad training. I actually broke my arm the first season I was scouted to play for Ireland. So I never actually got capped for them. And so that was a bit of a blow. I took a year and a half out of rugby because I had to have quite extensive surgery on my arm. And at that point, I sort of very much got into my sports therapy side of stuff. So after uni, I did my master's. This is all the while training for rugby in London. So I was playing Saris. So I did my master's in London in sports therapy. And it gave me that year and a half out, gave me like a really good insight into to the injuries that people are susceptible of getting, and then the recovery process as well after such a big injury. And so the two, like my two pathways, one in elite sport and the other in sports injury rehab and recovery, like meshed together really well through that time in my life, as you can probably imagine. I then met my partner Charlie, who owns the gym. We own the gym together, and she was actually the one who got me into CrossFit. She was training in CrossFit North London at the time, and she would send me workouts to do, and I was just at a Virgin Active gym. And she'd send me workouts. I would sort of makeshift my way around them with like the kit that was available. And I just started getting really into it. Loved the fitness side of it, always loved pre-season in rugby training. So it was like something that like caught my eye real quick, and I fell in love with it. And that is then how we ended up opening a gym together. She was in the police at the time, and she was fed up. She'd been 14 years in the police. She just didn't love it anymore, and she was over it. And she said, I really want to open a CrossFit gym, but I don't know if I should. And I kind of was the catalyst at the time. I was enthusiastic. I'm younger than her. I had my sports therapy master's. So I had all my coaching background from when I was 17. I used to coach kids swimming and rugby and all sorts of summer camps. So I was like, just go for it. Like, I'll help where I can. So she opened the CrossFit gym initially with another guy who, like, she bought out immediately because he just wasn't interested. And then more and more workload just came my way because she was still in the police. And I was like, oh, I'm not bothered. I don't really want to coach much. I'm working at London Irish Men's Club as a therapist. Like, I love rugby. It's cool. I like CrossFit for a bit of a hobby. And just more and more workload came my way. I just started coaching more. And before you know it, I ended up just being a full-time coach and a part business owner. And it kind of just worked its way in naturally that way. But because of my background and Charlie's background in elite sport, she played Premiership football and then Saracens Premiership rugby. We obviously had a huge understanding of what athletes need and what athletes want out of their training. And then obviously my side of things with A, through bad injuries myself, and B, as a therapist, it's kind of like a really good relationship, I guess. And so, yeah, that's how it all evolved about 6 years ago. So we've owned our gym now for 6 years.
Nice. Excellent. So that's a great story. And I think a lot of people will recognize similar type stories that they would have potentially gone through, especially some of the higher level athletes like you guys. It would be an interesting transition point into maintaining some level of competitiveness and some level of real interest in performance, but then also trying to do that with the general population, or even in your case as well, quite a bit in as an athlete yourself, kind of nearly still an athlete, as well as in a team setting, recognizing that there's still lots of scope for people making huge progress and really being competitive for a much longer time in their careers than just a handful of years potentially, or something like that. So that's interesting. Now, the rugby one, I think, is good. Like, so you're kind of one of those perfect storm people, I think, to an extent, mm-hmm. because you have both lots of good coaching ability or coaching experience, and you also have had the difficulty of a serious injury. You've had the high level experience of actual playing, and then also being a sports therapist on top of that. I would say is a perfect storm. I think it's a very envious mm-hmm. position to be in. But could you talk? We say that now, but it can be a pain in the ass too, no doubt. So I'm sure you're kind of looked on as a real guru in your setting, I suppose, because you have so many different facets to your personality and your experience levels. Could you talk a little bit about I suppose how people have people especially that you coach to a kind of high level, how well they've resonated with your awareness of what it takes to be a very high level, and the same with Charlie, a high level athlete, and then what they can take away from that. Is that encouraging them that they know that they have someone as a high level as you, really helping them out with a good awareness, or can it be quite challenging sometimes for them to kind of go, oh, I'm not
I'd
sure
actually I'm... say the former. I think we have a huge it's a huge positive response, A, to the fact that the gym owners are both women, and B, the fact that we both have come from such high level sport ourselves. So I think we earned our respect purely, obviously, then in going into CrossFit and being able to compete at high level in CrossFit helps reinforce that. But neither of us, obviously Charlie having worked in the police, and my previous coaching experience was after working with kids for years, was working with just with guys and coaching men and working with Premiership men's rugby teams. Mm-hmm. So we find it very easy to coach all abilities, all standards, whatever. But we also don't have any problems with the alpha male coming into the gym, as it were. Because I personally think actions speak louder than words. I'm like, it's not about what I'm saying here. It's we lead by example. We compete a lot. We compete well. And we have a good reputation as a gym for producing competitive athletes. And 100% I put that down to the fact that it's led from the front, as it were. We call ourselves the Wolf Pack. Yeah. And Charlie and I compete at a high level. She's master's age and she's one of the top 200, or was last year, in the world. So I definitely think it has a huge a positive impact on our members, them knowing that we put that hard work in to get to where we are. And that shows them it can be done. Like, we have, other than our previous sporting experience, our CrossFit experience has come, our abilities has come from coaching each other. We've never had a CrossFit coach. I certainly haven't. I went from rugby straight into CrossFit. So with the right understanding of movement and stuff from my point of view, and then with Charlie's ability to program and that real behind the scenes stuff, it's been mega. Like, it's allowed us to produce some amazing athletes at the gym, and without blowing our own trumpet, I just think our, like you say, the perfect storm. I think we have the right skills and the right mindset and the right background, and it all came together at the right sort of time, and it's just grown and developed as CrossFit has grown and developed. So it's been really cool.
Nice. So I suppose that's an interesting one, because a lot of places, a lot of gyms and a lot of high-level coaches and high-level I suppose teams and athletes would have similar experiences from a different point of view, I suppose. We'll say someone like myself, I don't have a very high level sporting background. I'm very much a career coach. I've been coaching since I was 16 odd 17 odd. I'm 39 now, so and multiple sports and things like that, but and been doing CrossFit since 2008 before a lot of people knew what was going on. But I'm on the other end of it, but I can respect that the significance and importance of having a background in awareness of what level of training is required to perform to a very high level, how that can resonate and push into and encourage the actual regular members or general athletes to be as good as possible makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, I would be someone who wouldn't have that huge background, but because of my potential experience, I would have essentially the similar type of a scenario as yourself. So you will maybe not have maybe a 20 years of coaching, whereas I have the other 20 years of coaching, whereas you have the high level experience. So I have, it's a difficult balance, I think, sometimes. And I think a lot of coaches can get stressed or else kind of worried that they may not have your kind of experience. And I would be someone like that. I'm like, oh, well, I haven't done this and this and this, but at the same stage, we're still able to make people make good progress. But it's an interesting one. I think that certain places, certain times are real gold mines, and your place sounds like a gold mine. And I've always been interested in those kind of places because there's a lot of reasons that certain cultures and certain, type of environments work, and that would be an interesting one, I think, in some like training think tank or Misfit or whatever it is. You have a lot in JST, like you have all of these really interesting environments that are fueling themselves nearly from within, which I think is great. We would have a different kind of a scenario in our CrossFit Galway community to an extent. We would have had a little bit of competitiveness, but not to the same level at all, and very much a general population and enjoying fitness and exercising kind of a one. But talking about that, you're the competitive type of side of things. Obviously, with pretty much every competition kind of shutting down at the moment, it must be a strange time for you guys as athletes and as coaches as well. Could you talk a little bit about what you guys have been doing recently or how your mindset maybe has changed a little bit in the last while, even in the last maybe year or so odd with the difference in the sanctions and things like that?
So so CrossFit Watford got a team to regionals the final year of regionals, so 2018. And obviously when regionals was then cancelled and things all changed and it went to the sanctions, it was like a massive, are you joking? Like, we finally made it to regionals. Obviously, I'm one of the lucky few that actually can say I did go to CrossFit regionals. And obviously, along with probably most other high-level athletes in that standard, was seriously gutted because I was just getting going with my competitive CrossFit. I felt like I had so much more to give. Like, my next goal was to try and make individual. But I was like, oh, you know what? I'm all about team anyway. It was kind of Charlie pushing the individual side. I was like, let's just see how this plays out. And lo and behold, it's played out brilliantly. Like, I think sanctionals is a way better way to allow more high-level CrossFitters to compete. I think it gives people way more opportunities. I think it gives people, therefore, more reason to train harder. And I've competed now in, I think 5 sanction events, obviously, before this has all happened. Mm-hmm. I did two team ones this season, and then I did 3 or 2 team last season, so maybe only 4, I can't remember, but with Team Nasty Lifestyle and I've absolutely thought that they've been incredible. They've been akin to regionals, the way they're set up, the way they're run, the caliber of athletes that are there. Like, it's no, it felt no different to regionals. My only sadness is that I qualified for an individual event, which was the Egypt competition. Okay. And I finally sort of basically got the guts up to actually accept an individual place to a comp, and not, I didn't have any niggles, nothing was holding me back. I was ready to train hard for it, and that would have been coming up in about 2 weeks. So yeah, that is kind of gutting, but equally at the same time, I'm in no worse position than every other CrossFit athlete that had just qualified for an event. Like, I've done 4 sanctioned events already, I've done regionals as a team already. So yeah, it's a rubbish time for athletes, but you kind of deal with it, right? Everyone's in the same boat, so it's not like you can cry about it. That being said, it hasn't changed how I am approaching my training at all. Like, of course, we're stuck at home and we have to train at home, and obviously I have limited equipment. But every day I wake up with the same motivation to get out and train, whether that just be a cardio workout or a bodyweight workout. Like, there's tons of stuff that I can still focus on. And CrossFit training has always been a massive part of my day-to-day life, obviously as a coach, as a gym owner, but just like, it makes me feel good. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter that I can't do ring muscle ups or I can't do like heavy snatches right now. It's just like, it's still CrossFit. I can still work on other elements of it. And I think we're trying to instill that in our members at the moment with the online stuff, the Zoom stuff, and we're getting a really positive response from it. And just reminding people that as long as you're moving, as long as you're staying fit and healthy, like, the competitive side can wait. Like, that will come back when it comes back. In the meantime, do what you can do. Do what you signed up for in the first place, which is just fitness, right?
Yeah, very much. I think that's quite an interesting a situation to be in, because we all obviously, and I suppose in my context as a coach at our place, I can constantly talk about CrossFit as a game. And it's essentially an unwinnable game. But it's a really enjoyable game to play. It's a pain in the ass at times because you're like, oh my God, I'm busted. But for the most part, it is such a vast game. And it's also very, on a very strange, on a different, an interesting level. It's very much a game of us. So, and I think it's an exposure of that mentality as it's the game of us. So we have to, we're both emotionally invested in it. We're both physically invested in it, mentally invested in it, hugely financially and business, et cetera. But I know you'd probably be the same. A lot of my partner, my girlfriend, and my family, well, somewhat of my family to an extent. Some of my family don't really understand what I do. They're like, okay, you're a bit that's a bit different. But definitely my colleagues in would have been in the gym are just hardcore across the people. But because of the game type mentality to it, it means that you can't lose necessarily, but you can really make good progress. So you can really make interesting challenges on a daily basis. Now, I think, and you'll speak to this probably fairly well, is the reason that you guys have been so successful, and a lot of places are very successful with their athletes and with themselves, is their awareness of how to program correctly and their awareness of how to manage recovery protocols appropriately, loading appropriately, strategy for the actual progression of movements, and patience on that. Like, I wouldn't have any, don't get me wrong, I think getting people moving is a hugely helpful thing. What you see at the moment, potentially, with a lot of people, a lot of coaches, is you're just going to do more and more burpees, you're just going to do more and more goblet squats, which is fine to an extent, but there needs to be that balance to it, and there needs to be that inclusion of all of the different areas in it. And I think that's where people like you guys and we try, and as I would try it as much as possible from our perspective, in my own place, our own place, to have that mentality of a longer game that you can consistently play and you can enjoy, rather than having to get a certain place by a certain time. I think that's one of the reasons why, like, exactly that, the sanctionals is such an interesting, is such an interesting situation, because now you have tons more opportunity to get to a particular, a really good challenging competition, like, and really fuel your own endeavor to get further and further on it. Whereas prior to that, with the regionals, I love the regionals as well. Believe me, it was an amazing thing. I went to myself and my girlfriend went to the games and the whole lot, and we saw all of these things, and it's mad. But the sanctionals, yeah, very much has a feel of the regionals, but now it's like, great, we can loads of us can play, which is really interesting.
Exactly. Brilliant. It just gives more people opportunity to compete at a really high level. And because there's so many now, whereas regionals, what was it, like 7 or something? I can't even remember. Yeah. Obviously, you were limited to only making your region. And as a European region was renowned as one of the toughest, if not the toughest in the world, like the chances of British and Irish athletes making that was so, so slim. And so then you were just looking at local comps and like a couple of like national level comps, I guess. But there was never that, like, my desire to compete at that high level was honestly undescribable. Like, I was so eager to compete at the highest possible level and still am. And so making regionals on team was like, I couldn't actually believe it when we got told we had made it above that blue line. It was honestly like my jaw dropped. I could not believe all the hard work and like the multiple repeats of workouts when you're trying to coach people through theirs and then redoing yours was just savage. So like the fact now that sanctionals dilutes that group of athletes is almost more A, enjoyable as an athlete myself, but B, way less like exhausting and taxing on one competition, just relying on getting that one competition, because they've all got their own qualifiers, or at least most of them have their own qualifiers. They're different times through the year, so you can work to one which suits you. Like, I just think it's a huge bonus that CrossFit has changed to that style of competition now, because it just opens up so many more doorways to different people.
And I completely agree. I think one other point on that would be, because it would be, in the previous iteration, you would have been aiming for one particular big competition and a very challenging mentally competition, because you're like, okay, well, look, I only have a certain amount of spaces to play with here. Then your aggression towards trying to make very, very consistent and quick progress is exacerbated. So you're going at such a high that if you do drop down and you don't make it, immediately your mentality goes differently and changes when you come off the other end of it. So if you didn't make it, a lot of the time you're like, oh, damn it. Okay, I have to wait a whole other year. I have to rebuild the whole project. Whereas with the sanctionals, you do have, I think one of the best things is you have a lot of those people who may not have made it now making it on a more consistent level. So they're getting more practice at competitive type environments and situations. And that's exactly what's needed. Like, it's game speed that people are trying to get better at. And that's what it's essentially allowing, is more game speed or more match practice to an extent, which makes it much easier to work with, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll move on a little bit, but that also gives, I suppose, a nice caveat into your own difficulties as, an athlete and as a coach over the years. But in your private life, you've had some difficult challenges also. And I think obviously with this kind of a situation you that we're all in, we all have this kind of strange fear and strange kind of level of almost kind of assumed grief to a small extent. It can be a very challenging time for a lot of us, but you've been dealing with this kind of a situation for a little while yourself, Ad, and your family. So could you talk a little bit about a day in the life of Laws and some of the challenges you've had with her?
Yeah. So my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. It's a rare form of Alzheimer's. It's called posterior cortical atrophy. When she was 57, so it was nearly 7 years ago now. And so over the years, obviously, as the disease has progressed, my sisters and I have just taken on much more of a carer's role. Unfortunately, because of the type of Alzheimer's it is, it's not just what you may know as typical forgetfulness. It's her motor skills and her vision, which was initially affected. So she required pretty much to be cared from within the first year of diagnosis, because she just couldn't see. So she couldn't drive. She would struggle with even writing and reading, so we'd have to help her with a lot of things. Like, she would do the crossword, but we would just have to talk it out to her and then help her. And as you can imagine, with any sort of terminal illness, it just progresses slowly but surely. And so we're now nearly 7 years in to mum having Alzheimer's, and she has, obviously PCA was the initial diagnosis, but she has more typical Alzheimer's now as well. So she doesn't really speak. She doesn't recognise my sisters or I. She doesn't know who we are by name. A little bit maybe through recognition. Sometimes she might suddenly have a spark remembering our face, so she might smile. But she's very happy lady in her own character. She's always been a really nice presence to be around, obviously even before she became ill. It's just strange because when I set the CrossFit gym up, she had already been diagnosed. And so she had a big part in the gym, which was honestly fantastic in the early years when she could still move and be active and wanted to be. Obviously it's my own space, so I could bring her into the gym and coach her in her own way through classes. So for the first, I think, 4 years of her having the disease, she did some form of CrossFit, which is obviously just incredible. I feel so lucky that we were able to give her that, because imagine taking a lady with Alzheimer's into a Globo gym. Like, I just don't know how that would have been done. So I used to take her swimming once a week, and then she'd come to CrossFit with one of the other sisters maybe twice a week. And everyone at the gym just accepted it. Slowly but surely, people start to realize there's something wrong. They ask questions, or they just start to figure it out. And the fact that we had such a community, and as you know yourself, CrossFit members are typically so kind and like helpful to one another. It was so nice for mum to not be looked at or questioned when she was in the gym. She'd just walk up to someone and just stand next to them, and then go, "Hello, everything okay?" And then the next, you know, someone else would go and take her arm and lead her back to another sister or whatever. And so obviously up until this year, that's when the disease has progressed quite far now. So she's pretty much just at home. CrossFit's been hugely helpful for not just my mum, but obviously myself, both physically and mentally. I just think it gives you an escape. And also my sisters, they all do CrossFit as well. I have three sisters, and then my nephew has been brought up pretty much in the gym. He's now four. So obviously, yes, mum's disease is pretty brutal, and it is horrible, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone's family, especially someone so young. But I can't thank CrossFit enough, and the fact our gym has been able to support her and my family and myself through so many years of progressive, like more and more difficult times, I guess. So yeah, I feel very fortunate to know people in our gym, to have a space that's safe for her, and to just have it as part of all of my family's life. It's been really, really special. Yeah, for sure.
No, I think you've, I think the challenge has been monumental, of course, from your perspective and your family's perspective. I think I'm one of these people who doesn't have, I've never had huge amounts of tragedy and things like this. And I'm quite nervous because I'm going to have lots and lots, I'm sure, soon. I'm like, oh, it's kind of worrying, but I can respect and appreciate the difficulty that you guys would have and are currently going through. But I do also recognize very quickly that, having looked at the Instagram account that you would have for her and the interactions, there's some beautiful moments in there, and then some really, really great, kind of really enjoyable sentiments to be gathered from it. And I think, like, every time I look at it, I go, oh, that's, it gives you such a huge sense of humility and a huge sense of appreciation for what you currently have. And even if it is under a difficult circumstance, you can still, and we all still can really appreciate that we have what we have whenever we have it. And I think something like you mentioned, exactly like CrossFit, is because it's such a raw experience that you go through on a daily basis, that you're playing the game, and the game is not flipping easy, like. So it very much gives you a sense of, okay, this is a very much a real life game that we can try and impact on, and therefore, if we can impact on the game, that means that we can have a better facility for impacting on our fellow human, our families, etc. I think it is it's phenomenal that the level of courage and humility and gratitude you guys are showing. So I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of other people would have similar type situations going on with their own families and so on. So they'll appreciate and recognize the difficulties you would have. But I think that makes a huge difference to it. When you have something like CrossFit in your corner, you have good people around you. That safety of environment is a huge, huge armor to use and to work with. So it makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah. I think just on top of that, obviously, because of the community aspect of the CrossFit gyms, and ours especially, if I was to have a job somewhere else in another gym, whatever it might be, you don't necessarily get that support from, like, for example, if I had to cancel one of my yoga classes on a Sunday because I had to look after my mum, you wouldn't have people kicking off and giving you grief about it. They're completely understanding. It's whole family first, et cetera, et cetera. So not that that is something I would do regularly, but it's something I know there would never be a backlash from if I had to do it, because A, every single member knows my mum's situation, and B, everyone understands that it's so important to look after people who really need you. And the gym looks after our members look after us. It's just like the community is the only word I can really use to explain such a thing. And you wouldn't get that in another job. So that is why I guess I feel so lucky in that I have the job I do. And obviously the fact that we do own the gym makes life a lot easier. But the people in that job and the people that we coach and the people that we consider friends who are members or whatever, they make life with our mum way easier than another job might. So that's why we feel lucky.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, that the community, especially now in the circumstances that we're in, it's very much bringing it back to brass tacks and going, okay, look, the evaluation of what is important is very much to the forefront, and it definitely makes us all think and become much more conscious of our family, our friends, the people that are actually very important and we've dealt with in the past and so on. And I think the community, like, I have a distinct feeling there's going to be a lot more people who are going to be playing curbs outside their front door for the first time in 20 or 30 years. I always found it hilarious. I always found it brilliant when we would get people in for our fundamentals. And I'm sure you'll appreciate this as well, that we would get people in and we would go, okay, can you skip? And they'd be like, well, I haven't in 20 years. And you're like, well, now you're going to be going back to it. So, so that kind of silly thing, if you had a skipping rope, now you're going to make some hay, like, you know, you're going to do great.
Exactly right.
Or you can make a lot of good progress. And I think that's one of the interesting points, and thank you for sharing your viewpoint, your thoughts on your difficult family situation had as well. But we're going to move a little bit now to, for those actually who are looking for it, that's at A Day in the Life of Laws on Instagram. Check it out, lads. And you guys are doing some great work with Alzheimer's Research UK, I think, is it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. We've had a pretty good relationship with them from early on because she was obviously a lot younger. There were various studies that are still being carried out. So at the time she was like, put me in for everything, Hat. If I can help, I'll help, sort of thing. So I took her into loads of various like research projects, mostly in like universities or hospitals in London. And through that, we just sort of, this relationship grew with Alzheimer's. I guess it's quite a unique story. There's four daughters and a mum, like, and a young mum. It's just unusual. There's no like spouse. My dad is around, but they're not together. So typically if you were to develop Alzheimer's, A, you would be older, and B, you'd usually be looked after by your partner. So I think they sort of latched onto that thing. And then obviously because I set up this Instagram account and because Instagram is this growing phenomenon, they just had an interest in it, I suppose. And then it just allowed us to develop this sort of online relationship, which has become a little bit more like, we know a lot of the those in like behind the media of Alzheimer's research, and we kind of just do as much as we can for them. And we've got some really nice things in return for that. Like we've had some videos of mum done and photos and stuff, which they've allowed us to keep, which they've used for various ads and stuff. So the relationship we've had with them from the start pretty much grew because of Instagram. And that has allowed us as a family, and me especially, to really cope with the whole thing a lot better. So like the value, especially imagine in society now, everyone is behind a screen, especially these days. social media is huge. Like, it's allowed us to connect with so many families going through similar things. I'm so glad I set that account up for my mum, which was, I think, maybe 4 years ago now, because it has helped us and so many other people ridiculously. Honestly, it was the best decision ever made.
Yeah. I think, and that's, it's something somebody said recently enough to me, and it does make a huge difference too. It is, when you look at, like, social media, obviously it can be demonized and it can be hugely beneficial and a lot of the time, but in circumstances like we're currently in, I think the mentality of looking for the helpers makes a huge difference. And if you look at that kind of direction, you're going to be okay. Like, you can look at the news and you can get downhearted about it and you get anxious and the whole lot, but you got to keep looking for those helpers. And I think that sometimes we would get away from that in our general lives. We would get bogged down in different things. And if you didn't have that support and you didn't have those extra support networks to work with, you are very lonely in a very lonely or challenging place. And I think that's one of the main things. We're going to look a little bit, we're going to caveat out a little bit now, if we can, we kind of go a little different direction, but we're going to go back to the competitive. So I am curious now about your thoughts on, obviously we have a time scale of when all things might go back to some level of normality, very much undecided and very much unaware of what's going on. And a lot of obvious anxiety in athletes and in CrossFit gym members and things like this. But those who would be competitive, do you have any particular recommendations for them that to keep them going? Now, is it just a case of pulling their intensity back a bit and getting a lot of practice on different things? Or is it a case of, okay, do you know what? We'll undulate some intensity, some controlled practice work, some intensity, some controlled practice work. Do you have any thoughts in particular on how to approach the next few weeks, months for those people?
What I've said to majority of our members, and also the advice I'm taking myself, the first thing is, if you don't want to train and you really have no desire to make up a home workout or, I don't know, do a million burpees or whatever it might be, then don't. Just don't. But I have said you really need to prioritize on moving. You need to find a way that's going to get you off the sofa or out of your kitchen chair and just move. That doesn't mean exercise. It just means stretch or do some yoga or do some mobility work. Do something which will get you out of the slump of, I don't have a gym to go to, I don't have my program to follow. And that is the first thing that I've sort of suggested for people to do. As I said earlier, like, I still have the desire to get up in the morning and train. And even though that training is not the same as it was, I still am motivated to do something. Yeah. And I know not everyone feels that way. So beyond that, I would say do something that you feel is going to motivate you a little bit more. So I have my map online page, my mobility page, which is all like follow along videos. And I've had a huge, huge positive response from that in the last 2 weeks because so many people are now stuck at home. So if mobility is the only thing you really want to do, great. Because you know what, when you go back to CrossFit, you're going to probably have no niggles. You're going to be ready to train. Your movement's going to have improved, etc., etc. So if there's only one thing that you can be bothered to do a day, make that mobility session, because no one is going to be hammering the training hard unless they physically live in their gym. So don't stress about the stuff that you now can't do and think about the little things that you should have been doing all along that you never did. So like the shoulder releases or the rehab program that you only ever did a bit of, whatever it might be, because you now have the time to do it. And I know people say, I'm working from home, I'm busy. I'm like, you don't travel, you don't commute anywhere, you don't go out at night, you're not going to the cinema. I'm like, everyone has extra time in their day, whatever it is, in the morning, in the evening, whenever it might be, to focus on something that will help you when you get back into CrossFit.
Yeah.
And typically that is going to be doing mobility work or rehab work. So that is my advice to people. Whatever standard you're at, that should be something people start to focus on at this time.
Yeah, I think that's probably... that's a challenging one, because that's the one thing that most people find the most difficult. If you ask somebody to go run through a wall, they're like, how many times? No problem.
Yeah.
You go, come here, you're going to do 90-90s. They're like, how many? What? This is ridiculous. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Are they? Are you go, okay, look, we're going to do band pull-aparts, or we're going to do band rotations, and they're like, oh, man, stupid things like that. So, but people like, obviously, the bells and whistles, but the problem really is that to try and find the motivation for that can be quite interesting. I think this is one of the, an interesting one I saw, I suppose I saw a while back, was the likes of Matt Fraser, for example. And now, obviously, very, very high-level athlete in the whole lot, and possibly one of the most best known in the sport of CrossFit. But the fact that he was okay with spending 3 to 4 hours or 2 to 3 hours minding himself and working on recovery and sitting watching repeats of Friends and things like this, or whatever it is, you know? Like, I think the motivation piece to it all is the most difficult. So I think a lot of the time it comes back to deciding, okay, well, whereabouts, what do I want to get out of this? And I think, like you mentioned there, if you're not feeling very motivated today, then that might not be the most appropriate thing to bash yourself and further into the hole. Like if you're, it's a very long project. Now, obviously the project is a difficult one because you don't know what the time frame is, but eventually things will, or some level of sport will return. Mm-hmm. Some level of competitiveness will return, and you're going to have to fuel that competitiveness some way. So I think a lot of the time it can be, especially for those kind of people now, it's very prudent to look back at, okay, what am I actually trying to do here? And what is my goals? What's my main driving points? Why am I doing the fucking thing in the first place? Like, is it my family is at me? Rarely it's your family that's telling you to do more burpees. You know what I mean? Yeah. Is it your partner? Is it your gym peer pressure? Sometimes, but not very much. So it needs to be in you to do a certain thing. So even with me with the podcast, like I'm so up and down with the motivation to do it. It's crazy. But no, I'm like, I'm not, no, I have to stay stubborn with it. I have to stay at it. Because it fuels me, and it makes life very enjoyable to talk to these really interesting people like yourself. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges is people find it very difficult to sit with themselves and look at themselves and go, okay, what do I want out of this? Do I want a certain amount of competitiveness? Am I okay with doing all of the work to get to here? Like, it's fine having the nice shiny stuff, but are you okay with all of that gravel you're gonna have to move? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you can speak a little bit about the mental kind of approach to it.
I think now more than ever you need to have like a bit of mental fortitude about you if you're gonna sort of carry on and come out the other side, as it were, and still be competitive. And it might change people's perspective completely. You might get some athletes being like, that wasn't enough for me. I don't really think I need that when we go back to training. Yeah. Or you might get some people that come out the other side and be like, this kept me going. CrossFit kept me going. I want to get good at this. This is my life now. Like, this is a huge thing for me. And each to their own. Like, as I've said, I've always had very high intrinsic drive. Hence, I've played high level sport. That's never been pushed upon me by a parent, by a teammate, by a family member, nobody. I have always just had that drive innately. And so for each person, it is going to be so, so different. I think the main thing is, as CrossFitters, I think this is especially true, that we like structure.
Yeah.
People like coming to your gym and being told what's on the whiteboard and what happens first and what kit they're going to need, how long the workout's going to be, and then what sort of score they're expected to get, for example, right?
Yeah.
And now everyone's stuck at home, maybe with access to a Zoom class if they're in a CrossFit gym like yours and mine, but maybe not. Maybe they just have an online workout posted every day to their Facebook page. Who's holding them accountable to do that? No one. Themselves. Oh, I'll do that tomorrow and the next day and the next day and so on. And you lose the habit. And so the best thing you can do is what I've said to those that are working with me at the moment on mobility is set an alarm once or twice in your phone every day around a time that you get bored of your work or like you typically have a tea break, whatever it is. And that's your 5 minute of mobility. And that's all it will be. And then the next day you make sure you do the second one because day one, you'll only ever do it once. Right. And so on and so forth. And I imagine within a period of a few days, a week or two, whatever, you'll have that urge to, I want to do a bit more. I want to do a bit more than that. That doesn't feel like that's enough.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure, I hope at least, that that will be enough to start building people a little bit of momentum to then have some desire to move again, to exercise again, whether that is going to be to be at a competitive level or just a recreational level is kind of up to them, right? But what I would hate to see is people that have worked really hard, whether that to be competitive or just hard on their mobility or worked really hard to get a certain weight on their squat, just be like, oh, poor me, I can't do that now, I'm just going to sit on the sofa all day. Well, your coach isn't there shouting at you the time on the clock. Okay, fine. But someone in here, in your brain, needs to get you off the couch and do something with your day. And yes, you might not have the CrossFit gym to drive to, but you still have people that will motivate you if you allow them to. And so much of it is innate, but I think you have to let others influence that, because otherwise you're going to end up in this pretty much crappy spiral of feeling low and losing all the gains that you did initially work so hard to achieve, right? And that would be a real shame, I think, for a lot of people.
I think that's exactly it, that at the moment, what definitely would be happening with a lot of people would be that they would have been training very, very hard up until very recently, and now they have to go, okay, well, what the hell, like, where's all my structure and where's my environment and stuff that was built for me or I was able to go to and it was immediately there at my hand. I think nearly the mentality has to be, to a small extent nearly now, for a lot of the people that, okay, you might not, essentially, the fact that you have a little bit less equipment means that you have to nearly look at it as you're a small bit injured. So like, okay, I don't have lots and lots of dumbbells. Okay, sounds, mm-hmm. So that means I have a bit of a calf strain. Okay, what could I do now other than that? What do I need to focus on when I have that injured mentality? So that might be one way of it. Now, it's more just that everyone, if you are anyway injured, have been injured in the past or anything like that, or you have an awareness of it, then you know that you'll have other things to work on. And immediately, you're allowing yourself more space to do that. So I think that's one of the biggest things is we now have nearly space to allow ourselves to simmer rather than boil and go crazy. So we can now go, okay, look, do you know what? This is controllable. We have time to play with. We have all of these different areas that we can utilize. Like even if something like that, if you're working from home, great. That means now you have peace and quiet to play with. You might not. If not, you have small children, you can use them as well. But you know what I mean? Rather than being in a furlough of your own that you're like, right, I have to get hardcore, I have to go to the gym, I have to make sure I'm doing this. Now you have a better perspective and you also have a lot more potential fun in your life because you're not as wound up on it. You have more space to play with, you have more space to explore at least what your motivation is. But exactly like you said, if it's only 5 to 10 minutes, you get an awful lot of business done. 5 to 10 minutes, you put in some Spider-Man lunges, you put in some down dogs, and you put in a decent dose of handstand work, yeah, you're going to be fried in 20 minutes, half an hour, and you'll have really improved what could be done. So like something simple and silly, like even handstand walks, I think is great crack now, because you can practice them any way you want. And most people have walls, and most people have done wall walks if they are practicing them. So immediately now you have a good opportunity to become more efficient at the particular movement. Now it's a pain in the ass, but the ones that are going to make progress are the ones that are exploring that stuff at the moment.
Yeah.
Like they're going to the awkward positions where they're like, do you know what? This is weird. What's going on? What do I do now? kind of thing, you know? Which I think is great because it definitely gives an enforced awareness of what is required when there is just the boring stuff going on. So I think this gives actually nearly a better appreciation for what high-level athletes go through on a very regular basis. Because they will just have, not necessarily a very boring, like they'll go for they have the days where the lights are on and things are going crazy and the crowds are there. But a lot of the time, you're in the trenches with your coach and a bar and boring skill work and da-da-da-da-da. And even watching you recently working on your muscle-ups and stuff. And it's like, everyone has to tidy, and it's really difficult. But it is that long process. I think that's the most interesting thing for people to keep an awareness of now, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people will, of course, struggle with that because they needed that buzz from the gym, or they needed that like certain workout, which they really loved. They loved lifting heavy and now they can't lift heavy or whatever. But as I said, like everyone's in the same boat. Like you can't control those elements of CrossFit anymore. That's fine. But what can you do? Like we've got a C2 bike at home. We've got a space on the wall. We've got a couple of dumbbells. Like I'm happy. Mm. I can still work on other stuff I'm rubbish at, like my strict hands and push-ups. Like you've said, you can do wall walks, whatever else. I just think once you accept, and everyone will take their own time to do it, but once you accept where you are, the kit you have, and what the situation is, the happier you're going to start becoming, because you're going to start realizing, cool, well, I can't do that, but these are things I can do, and that makes me excited. I think because of our background, because of sport, because of my mum, because of injuries, like you said, you can work around. I've had enough injuries from rugby that I've always had to figure out different ways of doing stuff. Those experiences probably play massively into my favor at the moment, because yeah. I am self-motivated as well. So I'm like, okay, I've dealt with these sorts of problems before. I've dealt with uncertainty before. Like, it's just another one of those things. It does not make me feel any different about CrossFit and about my own motivations to compete. Literally nothing has changed. I feel just the same. And I'm kind of like, cool, what should we do? Make another crazy workout up that I'm going to suck at. But you know what? Each person is going through it at their own rate. And that's just how I personally feel. So sorry for those that are listening to this and maybe think, oh, good for you, but I hate life right now. But it's fine. Like, everyone will come to their own point where they're happy again. And I hope that's sooner rather than later for most people.
Yeah, I think that's important, because you are going to have a huge amount of people who are not really in love with it. They're like, no, this is so strange for me. They find it so difficult. And I've gone through stages of that. I'm sure we've all gone through stages, small pieces of it. And it's a very much an evolving process. But exactly like you said, there has to be, you have to find what your motivation is. And you need to look, and this might be a very challenging time to look quite deep and go, okay, do you know what? What the hell am I doing all this for? Like, for your perspective, it is an interesting one, I think. For me anyways, over the years I've had different particular coaches and my own family and stuff like this, and people that have really had a huge impact on my interest in coaching. So I've had some amazing coaches. I was in the States in 2007, had some amazing coaches there and really interesting experiences, and met different coaches over the years, and that's motivated me to go in a particular direction. For you, has there been anybody in particular, coach-wise or in your professional time, sport-wise, or has it just been that consistent build-up of such a great community with Watford, with your mom, with your family, all of those experiences, that kind of kicked you on and driven you?
I guess, when I had one coach, my rugby coach at uni was a very, very kind man, a very considerate man, and very honest man. And I always responded really well to him, but I sort of craved someone telling me, you're not good enough. I craved someone to be like, you need to work harder at this, you need to be better at that. And as soon as I joined Sarri's, I got what I wanted. I had a very stern coach that was like, no messing around. And then when I went into the island setup at the time, the head coach was equally as tough. And very quickly, I realized, like, don't wish for the grass isn't always greener. Like, someone telling you you're not very good at something or you're not being picked because someone's better than you is actually like, oh, that's kind of hard. It's hard to hear, but you hear a lot of it when you play high level sport, because obviously there's always going to be someone there looking for your shirt number or whatever it might be. So what I realized I could control when I played rugby was my fitness. And so that's why I became like obsessed, almost to the point like pre-season being my favorite time of the year, because I was like, well, I can work hard on this and no one can beat me at this because this is up to me. Mm-hmm. My coach isn't saying someone's got a better left-hand pass or I'm not good enough at tackling or whatever. It's just my fitness, right?
Yeah.
And so that's probably the time in my life when I realized there wasn't going to be a coach that would help me in a particular way, especially not mentally. It was like, okay, if you want to be good at something, it's kind of down to you to be good at it. And in CrossFit, like you say, it's a never-ending game. I've not had a coach. Charlie and I have only ever coached one another through CrossFit. And ultimately, you get as good as you want to be. There's no magic coach out there. There's no one that's going to make you work harder or give you the magic formula to be better than someone else. And I guess I have the luxury of having learned that through years of sport and having various coaches through rugby, that I've realized that kind of, yeah, it is up to you. It is up to you how hard you want, how much you want it and how hard you're going to work for it. And it kind of bugs me when people say, oh, can you help me? Can you get me this? Can you get me that? Like, as a member of the gym, I'm like, I can't get you anything. Like, I can't do anything for you as a coach. I could be the best coach in the world and I can't get you that. Like, you have to do that, right? I can help you, but if you're not going to put the extra work in on top of it, then no, I'm not going to get you that, and nor is anyone else. So I've learned that from my athletic career, but also as a coach, that has pushed me on even more. And the members in the gym and the way that people respond to how I train and then also how I coach is really motivating to me. Like, the more I see people work hard at the gym and the more they say, oh, you help me with this, you help me with that, the more I'm like, that's awesome. I want to do that myself. I want to get better at those, or I want to be fitter than that person, or whatever it might be. And so you have this constant desire to just get better.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that has come from one particular person. I just think it's been a series of like people that I've met along the way.
Comes across like that.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, it is, I think it's an important part though, that you have, you obviously have, a very good awareness of what needed to be done at certain times, obviously with certain coaches giving you particular responses and so on like that, just to fuel the whole thing. But I think that's one of the most interesting points that you will have. We have, I suppose, within CrossFit, it's interesting. Obviously, it's a very individual sport.
Yeah.
But having come from a team background from yourself, from your own experience, and now being able to accommodate, I suppose, and to help people in a team environment to a small extent there, in Watford, that's a very helpful crossover to have. I think is you having such a good individual mentality towards it, but also having the awareness of, okay, this is how it has to fit into the team, and it's a perfect caveat into our. Sequential into actual CrossFit team sport, because now you're like, okay, well, these are all individual athletes, but they have to act as a team. So now that balance can be struck nicely because you have both of those kind of pieces going. And that's an interesting one, I think, because a lot of the time individual athletes might go, okay, look, I have to become very, very particular about my own activities. I have to listen to my coach, the whole lot, very, very strongly. But I actually think a lot of the time the team mentality in CrossFit is just as important for actual development, because it means that you can go, okay, well, look, I'm only going to get a certain amount of information, and now I need to really react to the situation on a more regular basis, which means that I become more aware of exactly what might be required for me as an individual athlete. Sometimes, and this I think happens a lot, is there's an expectation that every single CrossFit workout you do as an individual has to be full tilt, which sometimes it does, absolutely. But a lot of the time, it may not necessarily mean that. You're like, okay, well, it's an innate challenge, difficulty for a particular movement for you. So say something like pistols. If you're not very good at pistols, but you're amazing at most other things, then you might just have to be okay with a third or fourth place with the pistol workout, and then be okay with crushing everybody else. But in a team environment, it's very likely that you're able to, first of all, become very aware of what you might not be very good at, so you might not be utilized in that format. But also, you really can encourage yourself an awful lot by staying with your strengths and actually really progressing on with those. And it just makes you a better rounded athlete, I think. And even training with other people, this is why I think it is vital to look at where you're at and look at what you want to go to. Because like you said earlier on, once things shake down a bit, yeah, very much you will have a lot of people who may not be interested in individual at all. And they might be like, look, I just want to go team all the time. Or a lot of team people are like, you know what, screw that. I want to just hammer this and dig into it.
Yeah.
Because it isn't an easy sport, you know, it's not. So, okay, we're going to leave you to it soon enough. I've been breaking your heart and kind of cutting you off all the time. So apologies about that. But I get into it just as well as everybody else. So while when you're not training, are you, like you said earlier on, you're maybe not a big podcast head, but you're kind of working on it at the moment. Are you much of a reader? Are you much of a movie watcher? Have you anything for us for our isolation times to dig into?
Well, prior to isolation times, I pretty much spent, I would say, like 14 hours a day, give or take, at the gym. And I think sometimes people misconstrue that to think, oh, you're just there training all the time. And I actually have more time now to train that we're in isolation than I ever have.
I believe.
It's so strange. I've never had the time or made the time to do my shoulder rehab, like prehab work. And all of a sudden I'm like, I've got loads of time. I'm going to get on that and start that because why not? Right. I've got some extra time on my hands. So I was pretty much at the gym a lot. I had obviously my physio clinic there. So I had my clients there through the day. I do PT clients through the day. And then I'd spend maybe 60 minutes in the morning and then maybe like 75 minutes or something in the afternoon training. So my training structure was pretty scheduled to like one or two sessions a day because that's just what I would fit in. And then I'd have a 2-hour break, come home, make some lunch, meal prep for the evening, and then head back into the gym. So now I have a lot of extra time on my hands, and that's probably my difficulty. Like, I don't know what to do with that time. Like,
yeah.
I was either coaching, PTing, treating, or training, and now I have training and less equipment to do that. So I do need to figure out some stuff. I have some plans in place to further my knowledge as a therapist, some like postnatal work, female menstrual cycle research work that I'm going to look into. I obviously have my online business, Map Online, which is obviously super easy for me to stockpile a load of videos now, especially as people are sat working at home a lot. They need a lot more mobility work. So my days are slowly building some structure around trying to keep some normality with my training and also my work, so my MAP work. But I'm hoping as well to do some further stuff. Like, I want to get into some podcasts. I want to make sure I'm studying more because I've never given myself the time to do that. Obviously, I'm still programming for the gym, for PTs. And also, we have a programming company now that we've recently set up, Wolfpack Programming. So I program the conditioning for that as well. So there's a fair bit of online stuff that I do. I don't watch telly. We don't even have TV. We just have smart TV. Okay. So we don't really watch TV anyway. I'm reading the James Clear book, Atomic Habits, the moment. So I think that's a good time to get into a book like that, with when you can start creating new habits yourself around more time in the day. But my main thing, like, I do spend a lot of time doing mobility my own self. I'm very much like, do as I say and as I do kind of person. I don't like just telling people to do stuff if I'm not going to do it myself. So a lot of the time I'm doing a lot of mobility work. And obviously I can two in one that, like, I can double whammy that and film it.
Yeah.
But on top of that, I'm figuring it out. I'm figuring out what I should do with my day and my extra time, because it's kind of unusual for me to have so much of it. But yeah, I'm not complaining. The sun's shining. Like, I'm moving back to my mum's on Friday to help out with her. With her care, so we've gone into isolation for a week just to be sure that we're safe and everything. So I'm sure my life will get a little bit busy as I go home to be with my mum, but for now I'm just vaguely enjoying some extra training and stretching time and chill time, really.
Nice. I like it. I think it's good. I mean, I wouldn't say, yeah, the more I talk to you, the less I think you're lacking motivation, Elias, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Definitely not lacking motivation.
No. It's phenomenal. It's great. I think that's one of the nice things is I can just sense the positivity from you, and it's an encouraging thing. It's always really enjoyable to talk to somebody who has a glow of positivity about them. And it's just the energy. I can tell that it was funny when you said about that we've gone from coaching so many classes. I've gone from so many, I talk so much in my normal job, so much. I was saying to my girlfriend, Catherine, the other day, I was like, I literally go from talking for 5 hours, pretty much like 4 hours straight. And like not overly talking, but like constantly talking to humans, to maybe saying 10 words to myself walking around the kitchen now. I'm like, what the fuck? This is so crazy. So this is why I'm doing more and more podcasts, because I'm like, no, I need to be social. This is strange.
Yeah, I bet. It's strange.
It is a bit odd. I think that's one of the challenges as well, that especially for us as coaches, we have to allow ourselves a little bit more space to adjust to this situation, because it is quite challenging. Yeah. And we do need to find out, okay, do you know what? There is other ways for me to educate myself or to self-educate it, at least. When it comes to the actual activity, be it, like you mentioned, more stretching, more self-care, more sleep, whatever it is, it's absolutely vital. And just being okay with, like, I'm not very good at journaling or anything like that, but I'm extremely grateful all the time. I think I kind of look at it like, I don't know, are you into comics at all? This sounds very strange. No.
Into comics?
Yeah. Like, were you ever into comics? Did you ever read any of the Asterix and Obelix comics when you were younger?
Not really. I know them.
You know them?
Yeah.
You know them. So I think I'm like the big guy in that, because I fell into a vat of gratitude when I was younger, and now I'm just grateful all the time. So I'm like, I don't know how not to be grateful about these kind of things. You know, I've been blessed with huge amounts of things and I'm okay with it. Like, I don't have anything to complain about. I'm like, find a bit of a niggle here and there. My shoulder's a bit sore. I'm like, it is what it is. But I have all of these fantastic facilities, so I think I'm going to be okay with that, and it'll be good. Had, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you enjoyed the chat, and I think people will take a lot
very
from
much
it.
So. Thank you.
Good stuff. I think a lot of people will take a lot from it. I think it's very helpful to a lot of athletes for their training over the next while and their approach, and for us coaches as well. So it's hugely helpful. Thanks a million again, Hat.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks. So you've just been listening to episode number 55 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Hat Hewitt. First of all, folks, I'd like to say a massive thank you to Hat for joining me on the show and taking the time to record it. Obviously, we all know now that Had is full of energy and full of positivity, which is a great thing. So I hope she keeps that up, and I've no doubt she will. But thanks a million for joining me, Had. Folks, if you'd like to check out any of the other podcasts on the Humble Coach Podcast, you can check us out on our home base of podbean.com. You can check us out on iTunes and Spotify and pretty much everywhere you can get your podcasts. That's where we're at. Hopefully, you guys all have a fantastic day. Stay safe. I'll chat to you very soon.